least to Hamlet himself. Julius Caesar and Henry V live in a world of circumstance and event. They are lodged, as it were, in a real world. Hamlet's reality, in contrast, is almost entirely self-created. His soliloquies often have a dubious relation to the action of the plot, which is why they can be added or removed in the various versions of the play without any noticeable interruption to the story. Nevertheless, Hamlet remains the very pivot of the narrative. Like his creator, his centre is nowhere, and his circumference is everywhere. Hamlet has no reason to exist except as a projection from Shakespeare. He is a master of every mood and subject to none. He is possessed by an extraordinary mental agility and energy. He has many voices, but it is hard to locate any central or defining voice. No one is so free with words and yet so secretive about himself. He is addicted to puns and to wordplay, but his obscenities are matched by what Sigmund Freud called his sexual coldness. The play is invaded by the theme of duality, of appearing to be what you are not. That is why it is also suffused with the spirit of playing. It is not too much to say that Hamlet could only have been written by a consummate actor. It soon became one of Shakespeare's most celebrated dramas. It seems to have the singular distinction of being the only play performed during Shakespeare's lifetime at both the universities of Oxford and Cambridge. This was a sea change in the academic response to contemporary vernacular drama. Before this period, plays in English were considered to be below serious consideration. Sir Thomas Bodley banned plays from his new library at Oxford, stating that they were of very unworthy matters, and that the keeper and underkeepers of the library should disdain to seek out. Haply some plays may be worthy the keeping, but hardly 1 in 40. He was probably correct about the proportion. But Hamlet itself was certainly considered to be worthy. The young John Marston paid the ultimate compliment of copying from it with a remarkably similar revenge tragedy entitled Antonio's Revenge. It has, in fact, been suggested that the order of composition should be reversed and that Shakespeare copied Marston's play. There is no reason why he should not have been inspired by a faulty original to produce a compelling masterpiece of his own. He had been doing it all his life. Yet the origins of Hamlet are much more complicated than that. There was a true and original Hamlet on the public stage by 1589, since it is mentioned by Nash in that year. There was also a version of Hamlet being performed by the combined forces of the Lord Chamberlain's men and the Admiral's men in the summer of 1594 at Newington Butts. This production is confirmed by the notes of Philip Henslow. At some point between 1598 and 1601, the remark being privately transcribed in a book, Gabriel Harvey referred to Shakespeare and his Tragedy of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. The matter is further complicated by the presence of a printed version of the play issued in quarto form in 1603. It has generally been described as a bad quarto, but it is in fact a perfectly good acting version of the long drama marred by stylistic infelicities. The publishers, Nicholas Ling and John Trundle, had known associations with Shakespeare's plays and with the Lord Chamberlain's men, so there is no question of it being a pirated edition. On the title page, it is described as by William Shakespeare. A second edition was published in the following year, and with 1,200 extra lines was advertised as newly imprinted and enlarged, according to the true and perfect copy. In the first version, Hamlet is younger, and some of the names are different. Polonius, for example, is called Corambis. More importantly, perhaps, in the first version, Gertrude becomes convinced of her second husband's guilt and colludes with her son. The first and shorter drama is an exhilarating and exciting piece of work, in no way inferior as a stage production to the second version. The second version is more rhetorical and deliberate, with much greater attention paid to the text itself. The most likely explanation for these different versions seems to be that Shakespeare took an old play of Hamlet and fashioned it into new and surprising shape for the performance at Newington Butts in 1594. This is the version printed as the first quarto. Then, at a later stage, he revised it for a new production at the Globe in 1601. This is the second quarto. It should be noted that Shakespeare then seems to have revised Hamlet for a third time, adding and subtracting material for a version that became the folio edition of the play published in 1623. There is one other piece of literature that emerged in 1601. Attached to a volume celebrating the love and merit of the true noble knight Sir John Salisbury were sets of verses written by the best and chiefest of our modern writers. Sir John Salisbury had been knighted in the summer of 1601 for his services in helping to suppress the Essex Rebellion. Among these verses was Shakespeare's poem.